Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All 3 engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the sky.
Hello and welcome to Tame the Monkey, the show where we talk all things mindset and provide stories and inspiration to help tame your monkey mind. I'm your host, Kelly Fryer, based in the UK. Mindset, as we know, is the belief or beliefs that you have about yourself and your most basic qualities. And on this show, our experts share how your beliefs and understanding can impact your success. For those of you that have tuned in for the past 2 shows, you will know that we talked about empowerment and fear with 2 guests, Deborah McPhillamy and Ruby Maguire, and that I agreed to do a fire walk, completed a glass walk, and I've also taken some of Ruby's pointers about visibility on board, which will help me no end with my new website and my rebrand that's happening later this week. Now, our regular listeners will know that I'm on a deeper journey of self-development at the moment, and over the last 6 months have been discovering new things about myself, as well as changing my focus on who I work with and how I work with them. And everything is now in place and ready to go, so watch this space. I also want to thank our last 2 guests, Deborah and Ruby, for helping me unlock those missing pieces of the puzzles, which I was able to do through our conversations together. If you haven't heard any of the previous shows, you can find them on my website, which is kelly-fryer.com, and you'll find all of the previous episodes of the show under the show link. Now, this coming week, I'm looking forward to some time off, not too much, but most afternoons, as it's half term here in the UK. I'm meeting lots of people for coffee, have some meetings with some really great clients. On Friday, I'm meeting an inspirational teen and her mum to talk about mindset and how that's been able to help her throughout her studies. And on Wednesday, it's my mum's birthday. So in advance, I want to say happy birthday, mum. Now, when I was a child, my mum was the main breadwinner in our home, whilst my dad stayed at home and looked after my brother, sister and I, something that was totally unheard of in the early 80s. Now, my mum worked hard, gained promotions, completed her degree, and still gave us all of the love, time, and affection that we needed. And in some ways, you could argue my mum and dad were game changers, something my guest today knows a lot about. Today's guest is Laura, or Lol, Morrison. And Lol believes that the best way of transforming business and personal outcomes is through connection and positive communication. Lol is an expert in running businesses for profit in the technology, retail, brands and logistics sectors, leading programs creating change and efficiency in organizations through people, systems and process. Underpinning this, she's passionate about developing authentic confidence in leaders at all levels, motivation in teams and strategizing for business growth. Lol has 18 years experience in strategy, change management and commercial management and has worked with global multinational FTSE 100 companies at board level in a number of sectors, as well as co-chairing the BT Women's Network up to 2014. Subsequently, she also chaired the Talented Women Network independently. Lol has managed contract portfolios with a total value in excess of £100 million, and notable successes include cost and risk avoidance of over £10 million, programs to reduce cost by £5 million per annum, and all achieved in heavily male-dominated environments. Other career experience includes consultative selling, strategy and planning, product management, business improvement, advanced negotiation and dispute resolution, and training and development, including legal and regulatory compliance. I'm sure you'll all agree that's an amazing huge wealth of experience. Now, if you want to join in the conversation today with any questions for Lol or myself, listeners in North America can dial in on the usual number of 646-716-7979. To our North American listeners, the number is 646-716-7979. And for the rest of the world, you can use the chat function, which is now available from the show, or you can access the link via my Facebook page with any questions. So, Lol, do we have you with us? I know we had a bit of a problem there logging in. Technical joys of anything internet. Sorry there, guys. We will try and get her back in a moment. We seem to have a slight difficulty with the link. I thought we had her there, but we seem to have lost her again. So I suppose a bit more of an introduction, really. So I've had some amazing conversations with Laura before she joined the show with us today. And I know from her passion and enthusiasm for the work that she does is absolutely amazing. Let me just see if I can get her here. So hopefully Lon will be joining us in a moment. Again, apologies there. We don't usually have this this problem with the show, but let's kind of go through. So as I said, I've had a couple of conversations with Laura as we've gone through. And her passion and enthusiasm for everything that she does is amazing. And I know one of the things that Laura wants to be able to share with us this evening is a link to one of her programs, which really showcases the work that that she does. She is lives not far from me, actually. I'm not sure if part of that is what the connection problems are. So let's just try her again. Hi, Lol, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can now. Hello. Lovely to have you with us.
Wonderful. We get the technology working. Fantastic. Brilliant. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Kelly. Brilliant. Very, very well.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, I'm glad we've got you. We've got lots of listeners ready and kind of tuned in for our show this evening. So again, sorry, guys, for that slight technical difficulty that we had there. So, Lol, I don't know if you were kind of able to hear as we've gone through, but just in your bio, obviously talking about some of the massively, I suppose, impressive achievements that you had throughout your career. Now, what led you to where you are today? Oh, have we lost her again? Hi, Lol, can you hear us? Oh, I don't know if we've lost her again. Let's keep trying. Hi, Lol, can you hear us? Hi, everyone. Hi, Laura, can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, I can.
Okay, you hear me? Right. Try. I can perfectly. Let's see if this will work for us. Oh, apologies there. I don't know what was happening. So where were we? So yes, our first question. So your achievements throughout your career, amazing. But I suppose the kind of what got you to where you are today?
I think it's a couple of things. One, my upbringing. I was brought up in quite a challenging area, but within what I would say quite an entrepreneurial family. By that, I mean they did things very, very differently. There were always other businesses, other income streams that we had. And that really gave me a passion for business from a young age. I always took a very keen interest. And I was brought up because I'm one of girls, there were no boys in our family, very much to believe that it was possible to do whatever I set my mind to, which was something that was really, really useful. Mm-hmm. Where I grew up was a very industrial area, so I was exposed to business at a young age and decisions and seeing what was happening, particularly with the shift away from industry to service industries, the impacts that that had locally in the Northeast. Uh-huh. And that really gave me the encouragement, I guess, to go out and succeed in business because I was fortunate to go to school which was industry led. So, uh-huh. You know, role models, we had, you know, people from Nissan, British Steel, the other big companies around us. And that made me realize that through business, particularly with Nissan, actually, because of the Japanese ethics that they brought with them, through business we do have the capacity to change people's lives for the better.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
if
absolutely
business is done well. Yeah, so I was hugely interested in business. I didn't take a traditional route into business or even that career that you hear. If I tell you, I started university and I dropped out after the first term because it wasn't the right course for me. Yeah. So I was studying law and I left. I'd made the decision to leave, to be honest, about a month in, but I thought I'd stick it out till the end of term. And the reason why I left was, again, because the ethics weren't lined up for me. When they were talking about public law, that for me is how the legal systems can help people.
Yeah.
Not perhaps some of the things that they were trying to teach us. And when you're being told in an environment like that, no, just accept this, this is how it is, I found that very difficult to take.
So trying to challenge very early on.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably always why I've been, you know, a game changer, you know, always wanting to challenge. And my attitude when I left, I was the grand old age of 18, 19. And I just went, right, OK, very difficult to find a job in the Northeast. I was sending out application after application. And I was in this difficult place because I'd started university. I was overqualified for a lot of the roles that were down there. For things that I was overqualified for, I think when I applied, they looked and they thought, you know, we can't employ somebody like this because if we come in, she's going to start running the show.
Yeah.
So basically that left me with the option of, okay, go back to college and study something different. And I did start studying business and I also started studying fashion because I thought, well, you know, I've always wanted to go into fashion. I was very artistic and very creative as well as academic. And if I wasn't going to be able to get a job, then I was going to go and create a job of my own. Now, unbeknownst to me, you know, in that 6 month period of going back and studying fashion and design, finally, the big corporates, BT, got back to me with the offer of an interview for an apprenticeship. And it's quite a funny story because, you know, a friend, I'd moved house. And a friend came and met me and bought my post with me. And I opened this letter and I've got an interview the next day down in Leeds. So jumped on the train, got to the interview anyway, and didn't hear anything. So I thought, you know, I'm going to take the bull by the horns here. And I phoned them the following week and said, look, really would like to hear how the interview went, whether it's good news or bad news. What's the feedback? And they went and rifled through their paper and said, well, actually, somebody should have contacted you, would like to offer you the job.
Yeah, fantastic.
Now, I don't know. Is that true? Is it not true? I don't know. But they offered me the job there and then on the phone. So literally, yeah. I had a week to get myself moved down to Leeds to find a flat. You know, and it doesn't sound that far now, you know, the northeast to Leeds, it's 60 miles. But then, you know, that was a big thing for me because I was leaving my friends and family behind. And you know, I remember having a conversation with my father. What do you want to go and move to Leeds for?
And that way away.
Mobile phone industry. Yeah. You know, a fantastic opportunity. Mobile was so new. And the very first day when I walked into the office was the day that BT Mobile, as it was then known, it's now what's known as O2, sold their millionth handset.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a very celebratory atmosphere. My very first day, it's fantastic. But you think, millionth handset, that's a drop in the ocean. So this was right at the beginning. And I was really fortunate because I was the first apprentice that they'd taken for business management. And because I already had A-levels behind me, it was kind of design your own apprenticeship a little bit.
Okay.
And I had a fantastic, fantastic. Basically said, get as much of this from this experience as you can. And because I've been intending to go into law, back then you have the traditional four seats model if you're training to be a lawyer. So I thought, okay, I'll look to do something similar through the business. And so I spent time in customer accounting, and within 6 weeks I was handling specialised key accounts like BBC, Kodak, Dow AgroSciences, so big companies that were pulling in a lot of money. There was me as an apprentice chasing this and talking to, you know, their accountants and things, resolving disputes. And, you know, I just got stuck in, really. And from then I got the opportunity to do the training and develop the training for the Data Protection Act and the Competition Act, which were coming in 1998. Uh-huh. So I did the research on that and the communications plan to make sure that all of the staff in the call centre were up to speed with what the legal requirements were. So I was quite fortunate in that I had people around me that would see what I was capable of and actually give me projects to do with a high degree of responsibility. Now, some people would say, well, okay, you shouldn't have been doing that on apprenticeship wages. But actually, for me, gaining the experience was more valuable. I got a lot of exposure to very senior people in the business very, very quickly. And, you know, I began to make quite a good name for myself. I then got picked up to move into the quality team, and I was designing the website and doing the work on processes for our ISO 9001. Pardon?
Really varied.
Extremely varied, and it brought me into contact with every part of the organisation, because I had to go and map and understand how a customer service agent was doing something, how somebody in paging, you know, we're going right back in the day, was taking a customer order and the impact that that had on customers. And then when things went wrong, what was the complaints procedure? How did we handle it? So really looking at how we join up everything in the organization, because we were just about to go through a big project to change our systems. We then had the merger with Cellnet, and then things after the 3G licenses were auctioned off, and it was the very first online auction of its type, e-procurement, back, that was probably 1999, 2000, around about that time. So it's a very fast-moving, exciting environment to be in. But I just got exposed to such intelligent people as well from a range of disciplines. So people in sales who would have one way of looking at the world, people who were product, who had a different way of looking at the world. And the job that I wanted, you know, I saw the account managers used to come in and they'd be running the big contracts, and, you know, they really had that almost opportunity to run a business within a larger business, and that really appealed to me. So, you know, my thing was, okay, how do I get there? And but unbeknownst to me, I had the managerial job lined up when I finished my apprenticeship, and then the sale happened. So the business was about to become MO2, be split off from BT. So I thought, okay, what do I do in this scenario? I'm going to put CVs out to all of the opportunities across the whole of BT, because BT is a very big organisation.
Yeah.
I knew that if I wanted to move up, I was going to have to get international experience. There were certain things I was going to have to do. And I've been lucky that I didn't just have one mentor in the organisation where I was. I had several different mentors. So people that were head of accounts, people that were head of product management, that would help me and guide me in my career. So I actually got extensive coaching on interview technique and CV writing from one of the guys. And I think 12 CVs later, I was called to interview on one day for two different jobs in different parts of London. One of those parts of London happened to be Hemel Hempstead. I was a little bit optimistic.
Yeah,
I thought I'd get a coach there. I didn't realise that at the time we had Silverlink, as it was, and there was a train that went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, went for these two interviews. One was in the business, the broadband, when that was being developed, and the other was something called ECRM. Now, ECRM, for those of us in internet marketing now, we understand CRM systems, electronic customer relationship management systems in 2000. And no sooner had I left the building and I was on my journey on the way back home, 20 minutes later, I got a phone call. We don't want to offer you the job that we interviewed you for. We want to offer you a job where you can use your talents.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. So I had another move down south. And so moved within the month. and had a fantastic time again, learning with some very intelligent people. It was an extremely small team. The organization was maybe 25 people, something like that. So small business attitude in a large business with that kind of financial risk taken away. But we had to be accountable for the money that we had. So I found myself, again, I seem to just get thrown into these situations with two of my seniors who reported to the guy that was running this part of the business. They were both away and the forecast, the financials needed doing. So I ended up having to do it. They went, here's the system, you go away and do it. And luckily, I'd done enough studying by then to know where I was at with my HNC in business and finance. I did a better job than the job the guys who'd gone away. And everybody went, well, okay, we don't like doing forecasting. Right, Laura, you take this on. That led me into doing strategy and planning roles that I did later on. So I was kind of lifted and shifted in a reorg. And again, that happened because of having the right relationships with people. So I'd had a mentor that was in that area and knew what I was capable of, knew that I was keen to advance. So they lifted and shifted me into that part. I was headhunted then in, and I had a bit of a bidding thing between two different parts of the organization, between outsourcing and security. And so I went and took some advice from the guy that had been the senior director in terms of what I needed to do in my career. And he said, look, whichever one you go with, you need to develop customer facing experience. So I took that on board and ended up running the operations for security. So looking at all of their contracts. From that, I'd already by then been sponsored and put through my business management degree. I'd completed that down at London Met. So studying part-time was always a absolute feature in the first probably, I would say probably about 8-9 years of my career. I always had something I was doing. No sooner had I finished my degree than I debated, do I do economics or do I do law? And because I was doing contracts, it made sense to go for law. And again, I was very, very fortunate that BT then put me through. So ironically, given it was a law degree I dropped out of, that was what I ended up then going and acquiring.
It can be very different though, I think, can't it? When it's something that you can actually feel the benefit of and you know how that's going to be able to kind of, I suppose, shape your work, the work that you're doing, your career, rather than maybe just kind of going through it at university, because it can seem very theoretical, can't it?
I'm not so much sure it was that. I think there is a huge benefit, and actually I would say the traditional education system wants to have a serious rethink, because actually we have graduates going in incurring debt. Now, if you have a graduate who is, you know, for every £1,000 they borrow, with the rates of tax in this country, they're going to have to earn £1,300 to even pay it back without any interest on top. Now, you look at the way that I did it and I was sponsored, my company were losing the corporation tax on everything they spent on me. So actually, the investment is probably half of what we're asking graduates or to-be graduates with little income, because they're not earning yet, to put in. A company pays effectively 50, 60% of that when they put somebody through. And it's the companies that get the benefit. And I actually think you get a much better education and embedding of the learning, because I was transferring my learning from the lived environment in business to apply that to the theory and then bringing the theory back into the business to inform my practice in business.
Yeah, so you could see the connection much more clearly. Brilliant.
Surprised in a large organization how few people have an understanding of things like return on investment and how to calculate that.
Yeah, that's a bit, it's a big thing that we all need to be looking at. So our listeners in North America, if you have any questions that you want to call in with Laura, you can dial 646-716-7979. So our North American listeners, 646-716-7979. And for our listeners in the rest of the UK, if you have any questions that you want to pose to Laura or myself, you can do so via the chat function, which is now open, or via my Facebook page. So Laura, again, it was kind of, I suppose, fantastic there. And I think, you know, I suppose I had a very similar journey. I didn't actually want to go to university at all, but have then been able to, you know, kind of pick up varying different degrees as I've gone through, because I can see the value of them. And I think you touched on massively there about the return on investment. And making sure that, you know, that's visible and kind of where we need to go. And I think just within what you were saying there about kind of running a small business in a larger business, as it were, we're starting to, you know, larger organisations, and I know certainly a lot of the people that I'm connected with talk much more about kind of intrapreneurship.
Absolutely.
Would you say you were kind of in the very early stages of that then with what you were doing?
Absolutely. In fact, before it was a thing, actually a couple of years ago, I gave a presentation on the skills of intrapreneurship versus entrepreneurship. Yeah. I think there's a really strong case for a lot of people say that entrepreneurs will never be hired by corporate businesses. I think there's a huge case for corporate businesses looking to hire people who have been entrepreneurs. And vice versa, people who are within a business, who have that entrepreneurial spark within them, they are entrepreneurs. And actually, if you can allow them to flourish within your organization, fantastic. As I say, we had this, you know, this global backing, but the ability to think locally and act as a small business, almost autonomous unit. And that was the case in many of my roles in BT. We were given that bandwidth and that space to flourish before anybody had invented the word entrepreneurship, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, we're quite good at giving a label kind of 10 years down the line, really, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. But I think absolutely, it's great we've got a language for it, and it's great that we can talk about this, and it's great that we can help people. You know, not everybody in a business is going to be entrepreneurial, yeah? Nor do we want them to be, the same way as we need followers. We don't need everybody to be able to lead, because some people, they need to follow, and we need to have foot soldiers too.
Yeah.
We can't all be all things. There is a bit of a thing at the moment. It's the in thing to be an entrepreneur or to be entrepreneurial. But I do think businesses, where they need to get better, and the skill that I'd like to see cultivated conversations about, is the skill of taking calculated risk. Because when you talk about, you know, what were the keys for my success, it's one, being able to spot an opportunity, but two, deciding when to act.
Yeah.
And so the ability to take a calculated risk, and that means that organizations need to actually embrace the fact that, you know, when you take a risk, it's not always going to go the way you expect it to. You've got to create an environment where it is safe for people to learn, and learning can include making mistakes. It's not the mistake itself that's the issue, unless you're losing millions. It's how you correct from that. And I'll give you an example of one of the things I came across in my corporate career. I was called into a contract, and it had been signed, and it had gone through all of the sign-offs, which were quite rigorous. And actually, they'd missed pricing something in. So I scanned through it, and I saw what they'd missed. And, you know, now I could have gone to the people that signed it off, and there could have been a whole lot of finger-pointing, but there was a situation we needed to deal with. The ink was dry. And actually, what I did is I picked up the phone, and I spoke to somebody on the other side, and I said, look, you signed this contract. The only issue is this contract doesn't cover this scenario. Now, if this scenario is going to happen, we need to put in a fee to manage that scenario. And the other side agreed to it, because I thought quickly, and rather than make a drama, picked up the phone and went, right, okay, this is what we need to do. Control. And that's what we did. And that went on, rather than being a loss-making contract, to become one of our most profitable contracts in that sector at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
just through that,
how you handle
spotting it and communicating.
It's communicating. But what I was able to do, because it was successful, was say to the team, OK, here's a lived example of actually this is what happens when you don't go through the steps.
Mm.
And, you know, here is a way, if you find yourself in this situation moving forward, this is what we need to do. We need to do a gap analysis. And again, it's that opportunity spotting. How do we correct?
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like the analogy of the airplane, isn't it? It's off course 80% of the time. It's how we respond and how we deal with things that counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think, and again, I suppose we're similar backgrounds and sort of both come from that corporate space, but do you find that when it comes to kind of taking risks and it's opportunities, it's a part of our mindset. You know, we operate a lot, you know, senior leaders within business operate a lot from a place of fear. And actually, their mindset is intrinsically linked to the belief that actually, you know, if this goes wrong, you know, the consequences will be too vast for us to do anything with.
I find that an absolutely bonkers mindset to have. And it would frighten me that senior leaders have it. But I do understand what you're saying. I mean, I have seen it myself. And you look at the consequences of what, guys? You know, the numbers on your balance sheet are just that. They're numbers. They can move. They can change. Now, if it impacts people and you're having to lay people off, yes, that's quite serious. And we've all seen those scenarios, and those scenarios happen. Look at BHS the other week. Yeah? Things go wrong. But I think the attitude you have to have, my golf instructor, he's got a very good saying, is that you can only play the shot that you're playing at any given moment in time.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, the organisation that I was in, because I was in the global services part of BT, and we've seen the fortunes be fantastic. And then we've had, you know, that whole cycle in the 2000s of the share price falling, things going wrong, massive amounts of debt on the books and things like that. So, you know, you look at something like that and we've had those times. And actually what I think was a real strength and where good leadership came in was we could only play the shot we played. So what we would do is have a look at, okay, what are the contracts you've got? Where are the opportunities to maximise those? Where can you build on the relationships you've got with your clients? Because that's the thing that turns things round. It's relationships.
Yeah.
So I think keeping that cool head under pressure from a mindset point of view. And, I mean, you've probably had times like this. I know I certainly have since starting my business where something's gone wrong and it could be a huge risk to your business. The only step you can take forward.
Yeah. You can't go backwards, can you?
Exactly. So I think that is really, for me, the key takeaway on mindset is actually what I find, the people who are successful have a forward-looking mindset.
Yes.
So we can learn from the past and it can help us. You know, and the more successes we have, then for me, success builds upon success. It's a snowball effect.
Absolutely.
The
it
more
helps
confident
that, build that
you
confidence.
Become.
Yeah,
you have that confidence. And it's then when you get to that point where you start calling it instinct or intuition, that's actually just years and years of learning.
Yeah, I suppose to some extent. I mean, I've done quite a lot of, again, around sort of intuition and I think where that fits. And I think, again, I don't know if you found the same. I think intuition for me is something that we have, and I think it's the confidence absolutely that kind of helps us tap into that. But I know, you know, I spent most of my career just following a gut feeling. And then realizing actually, you know, I suppose when I had enough confidence and I had enough experience behind me that actually it was, you know, absolutely, yes, I should have been listening to it. But I think, you know, from my perspective, you know, we all have intuition. It's just whether we choose to accept it or ignore it, I suppose.
For me, it's that absolute trust in yourself. And I found the times when things have gone wrong, going to the gut instinct.
Yeah, if you ignore it in that way. Yeah. Okay. So talk to us about game changers. I'm conscious of time. We obviously have those technical difficulties. I'll just give our listeners the number again in case anybody does want to come in sort of the last 20 minutes or so of the show. So our North American listeners can call into 646-716-7979. And if listeners across the rest of the world have got any questions, please do use the chat function. So as I said, we've kind of spoke, you know, huge experience there, lots and lots of, I suppose, knowledge, skills, experience that you were able to gain. And I think what you've demonstrated is, you know, kind of sheer will and determination to, you know, get you to where you wanted to be and get you to succeed, even if you didn't necessarily know what that route would be for you at the time. But you, obviously your business is about game changers. I know you do a lot in that at the moment. Just kind of talk to us about what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. So game changers are people who have the ability, and they can be at any level within an organisation. They have the ability to change and do things differently. Now, from an organisational perspective, where that's exceptionally interesting is they can bring in something new that changes the way we do business or a technology. And what they create can be a huge leap. So I'll give you an example. One of the game changers I worked with very early in my career was the guy that helped develop GPRS, the precursor to, you know, the Wi-Fi, being able to download internet services onto your phone.
Yeah.
That is a game-changing development. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Game changers are, I would say, the traits that they share are creativity, the ability to go deep and connect things that other people wouldn't necessarily see the connections between.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe there's a huge capacity there for lateral thinking. So they're life's problem solvers.
Yeah, okay, and doing it from a deep level.
Yeah, yeah. They have the ability. I've got a phrase I use with a couple of friends of mine because I think they're very much in that category. Professional dot joiners. And it's really interesting. I've been doing some work with, I had a little look earlier this year and came across another company that was using the hashtag game changer because I registered game changer and changed the game as hashtag. Who else is using this? And I found this really interesting recruitment organization, and they've actually done studies and research on the traits and have come up with a matrix and actually a psychometric, they call it an organometric test, which looks at game-changing traits. And it's that concern for something being as good as it can possibly be, and that might be driven from something like a concern for humanity, you know, people who are thinking around solutions like clean energy. So it's not always coming from, you know, pure commercial, but I believe, you know, if you follow the purpose, you follow the things that are right for people, the profit will naturally follow.
I suppose you're kind of creating that demand, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because if you look at buyer behavior now, people want to do the right thing. They want to buy from the businesses that are making the right decisions. If you look at Elon Musk and the Tesla launch.
Yeah, much more kind of corporate social responsibility, isn't it? I think I think when we see the different generations coming through, it is much more about, you know, the impact, you know, what sort of impact will I make? What sort of impact will this project make? And all those different bits and pieces. Do you find that?
Yeah, I think impact, individuation, exactly, the personalization of the impact that they make. What is their personal contribution? So if you're looking at something now like how something as simple as our energy bills are presented, where it tells you, are you higher or lower than the rest of the population?
Yeah.
There's bits of nudge theory. And I think the other thing I would say, though, is with CSR, with the generation that are coming up, a little bit younger, perhaps, than you and I, they will see, because I've seen a lot of corporates trying to do the CSR, the greenwash veneer over what they're doing, and they see it a mile away. So it's very much about authenticity as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And those core values, I think, with a lot of the youngsters that I work with and that I talk to that are kind of starting to come up the ladder now, it is much more about that core place of values. And I think you've mentioned as well kind of that purpose. Which is vitally important. So you spoke there, Laura, about the users of the same hashtag of game changers. So how could I suppose go back slightly. I did some work a couple of years ago with a guy called Dr. David Hall. I don't know if you've come across him, from Bedford University.
And he does a lot about kind of innovation and says that actually you can't have creativity without innovation and vice versa. Mm. So in terms of them being able to, I suppose, kind of motor forward as a game changer, either as, you know, somebody as an intrapreneur or an entrepreneur or, you know, any kind of member of any workforce anywhere, how would you, I think you were sort of talking about the traits there, but what would you say then the traits are of these game changers and how, you know, how can we encourage more people to do it?
Well, what's interesting when you look at what's been put together in the measurement of this is actually everybody has the traits. It's just whether it's dominant or not dominant. Uh-huh. So we do all have it within us. How we enable it to flourish, I've given this a lot of thought because this is one of the things that I'm researching and going back and talking to people that I've worked with in the past about, because I know that for me, the reason I was able to stay within corporate, most leave corporate because it's not at the moment with the way the structures are, a natural home and environment that's supportive. I was just very, very lucky because I was in the technology industry, which encouraged it. How we help them flourish, I would say, one, allow a degree of self-management. Nobody goes to work to do a bad job. So if you give people trust and responsibility, and I'm a huge fan of the passion project. So, you know, very much like, I think it was Google that were one of the first to do this. They used to give their employees 10% of their working week to spend time on a project that was important to them.
Yeah.
And I think you need that. I think whether it's within the organization, whether it's through volunteering, whether it's through tinkering down the bottom of your garden, whether it's writing, everybody needs something where they can engage and tap into that flow, because we are all capable of having brilliant ideas that can advance people. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to be the next Elon Musk. It can be something, a game-changing thing can be something as simple. I'm coaching and mentoring one lady at the moment who, because of her experiences, has set up a foundation in Africa helping deaf children.
Oh, fantastic.
But teaching new methods. So it can be very, very local. It can be very, very personal. It's about people giving themselves the permission. And I think that actually, you know, you're talking about senior execs being rooted in fear. I think actually a lot of the human race are rooted in fear. They're waiting for somebody to tell them that they can start living their lives.
And what do you think then we need to do to change that?
I think we probably need to look at more education and conscious communication within the school environment. Actually, this is a little bit of a drum of mine because my children, two of them are school age at the moment. Mm-hmm. And what I see sometimes is the way they are in a normal goal. You know, they're not at a Steiner or anything like that. But what I see sometimes is I see some great teaching happening, but sometimes I see teaching happening which tells them they must do something, or tells them in such a way that it stifles curiosity. So I think you've got to encourage curiosity, creativity, conscious communication.
If you can encourage those,
If you can encourage those three things, particularly from childhood, great. Now, if somebody's come through experiences, now I also think, you know, you need to give graduates coming in the space to explore this. So if we've got graduates coming into an organisation, or you've got vocational learners going into their first jobs, how can you as an organisation design their learning experiences to give them that? How can you give them the right encouragement and mentoring? And the thing that was pivotal for me, actually, there was one particular in my 20s, I was very fortunate to be given training in things like board breaking and the art of the possible.
Yeah.
That actually, you know, that whole piece around removing limited beliefs, because anybody, I don't care who you are, by the time you're 20, you're going to have a couple that need dealing with.
Absolutely.
But if we accepted this from an HR point of view, rather than trying to rank people 1 to 5 and you must be perfect in this very punitive system, which we've seen come in from the, I think it was the Michael Armstrong managing performance stuff that was adopted certainly by a lot of the companies in the UK, and the consultancies, they made a lot of money out of it. But if we took a better and more nurturing approach of, do you know what, guys, let's just do the best we can. Let's just focus on being the best we can.
Yeah.
Work would be a much nicer experience for people.
Well, I think life would in general, really, wouldn't it? I don't think it's necessarily just work. I think, you know, we're comparing ourselves against, particularly now, I think, you know, you sort of spoke about being able to sort of download things on phones. But, you know, we're constantly in this world of technology and we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people and, you know, looking at, I suppose, the kind of virtual lives of others, be it, you know, houses, jobs, money, income, cars, you know, promotions at work, businesses, all of those types of things. We're never feeling as though we're good enough because the kind of world appears to be telling us that, they, you know, that everybody else is better.
Again, huge drum of mine to bang because I think, you know, in the 50s, they outlawed things around subliminal advertising and learning.
Yeah.
Now with where we are, turn on a device, it's there, isn't it? Fear-based marketing and all of that. And I profoundly disagree with it. And I was having a conversation earlier today. I had some family here visiting. And for me, I think the new luxury is going to be time disconnected.
Absolutely.
Be connected, but we're losing our connection with people.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, I don't think people should have to use LinkedIn to get a promotion. I'm still a firm believer it's about your face-to-face relationships or even speaking to people over the phone relationships. It's about being real people. I worry to some degree that with technology we're going down a slight rabbit hole. We're forgetting.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, I think, yes.
We're forgetting how to live. You know, if people don't make conscious choices to tune out of things, it will shape how people think and their levels of creativity. Because, yes, there's fantastic things we can do with computers and online and how technology has advanced us. I am the biggest supporter of technology as an enabler. But there's only so much
control over it. Yeah, it is. And I think for me, I was having a conversation with somebody on Saturday, you know, in the evening, kind of come 8 o'clock, there's no laptop, there's no mobile phone, there's, you know, my sons aren't on computers, you know, all of those sorts of things, because I want, you know, we need to turn everything off and recharge, have conversations, make sure we can switch off so we can sleep properly, recharge batteries. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't watch the news. I don't really read newspapers. Actually, if it's something that I need to know, somebody will tell me.
Yeah.
You know, I choose not to have all of that kind of thrown at me all of the time.
Yeah. And I think that's going to become the distinction for success, is what we consciously allow into our, if you like, bubble of our existence. What we allow in will be what influences us, and it will be that shapes the outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, now, Laura, I'm over to start. We're going to have to, I suppose, kind of start to draw it to an end. I think we'll definitely have to have you on again at a later date. And, you know, huge apologies again for the technical difficulties. I suppose just for a couple of questions, one question before we finish, then I'll ask you how people can get in contact with you. But how would you describe success?
Success is the freedom to be able to choose what you want to do and how you want to do it. So it's not financial. It's not any of the outward trappings. It's about the ability to be happy.
Mm. I love that. Ability to be happy. I love that. Very good. And Laura, how can our listeners get in contact with you?
To contact me, email info@thegamechangerconsultancy.com. We have a website, which is www.thegamechangerconsultancy.com. And for those of you that are women, there is a program which we're going to be launching, a free program which you can join on the 21st of June, which will cover personal branding. It will cover how to cultivate your network, and it will also be something where you'll be getting daily exercises, weekly webinars, and that is www.thegamechangerconsultancy.com/for women. And I think that'll be going out in the links.
Thanks ever so much, Laura. So I think, as I said, I'm ever so sorry that we will have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being a guest. We will absolutely have to have you on again in future. I'm conscious, again, there's lots and lots and lots for us to talk about. And I'd love to have you back. You said you were kind of carrying out some research. So I'd love to have you back on to kind of maybe talk to that in a little bit more detail, as I think explore a bit more of this game changer thinking. I think we need to get much more of that out there.
I'd love to, because I've got some fantastic interviews lined up, which I can't share right now, but with some really influential people. So I'd love to come back on and discuss that.
Brilliant.
Kelly.
Do share those with us. Do share
Lovely.
Those with us. Thank you ever so much for being with us. And sorry again for the tech difficulties we had earlier.
It's technology. We live with it, but it's wonderful. But that's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you, Kelly.
Have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So a great interview there from Lol Morrison from The Game Changers. Again, if you want to get in contact with her, it's info@thegamechangerconsultancy.com, or you can pop onto their website. And again, I think Laura just mentioned there the free course that is available for women that will cover branding and networking that's available on the 21st of June. I think the key point there, I think, you know, or lots of key points there, lots and lots of interesting points, but I think I want to get you to really focus on those three C's. So curiosity, creativity and conscious communication. I think they're vital for us at any age, whatever stage of our careers that we're at and however we want to be able to. Thank you very, very much for that. If any listeners would like to appear on any of my future shows, you can contact me via my website at kelly-fryer.com. My guest next week is a wonderful woman who's inspired me, made me laugh and demonstrated the importance of being different and following your dreams. A good friend of mine, and that's Tanya Fitzpatrick from Align Somatics. Tanya teaches, trains and educates in somatics and has taught in the UK and Australia. And Tanya will be demonstrating live some of her techniques on the show on Blab next Monday. So definitely one not to miss. So again, thank you all very, very much for listening. Huge apologies for the technical difficulties. As we've said, sometimes it's just the joys of technology that we have these things happen. But I hope what you were able to listen to, you thoroughly enjoyed. So thanks for staying with us. And a huge thanks to Laura. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Good morning, welcome to Burger King.
I'm looking at this enormous burrito, and man, it's big, I tell you that. Dang. Mm. Give me one of them enormouses. Enormouses. Watch out. Mm-hmm. Let's do it now.
Okay, I think I know what you're ordering.
Get the new Eggnormous burrito now only at Burger King. A hearty breakfast burrito packed with sausage and bacon, plus eggs, cheese, and hash browns. Only at Burger King at participating restaurants.
Good morning. Welcome to Burger King.
I'm looking at this enormous burrito, and man, it's big. I tell you that. Dang. Mm. Give me one of them enormouses. Enormouses. Watch out. Mm-hmm. Let's do it now.
Okay. I think I know what you're ordering.
Get the new Eggnormous burrito now only at Burger King. A hearty breakfast burrito packed with sausage and bacon, plus eggs, cheese, and hash browns. Only at Burger King at participating restaurants.